All right, so folks, without further ado, let us hear some permanent things from the one and only James Matthew Wilson. Take it away, brother. It's all yours.
Okay, so the first poem is appropriately called The First Sunday of Advent. And I wrote this this poem the first winter after we moved to Pennsylvania. And you'll hear about Center City, which is the name that's used for the very center of Philadelphia. And I always ride the train, so you'll hear the train line that I love so much. In fact, the poem will end at the other end of the train line, the Christmas poem. The first Sunday of Advent. The weight of steel against the heaving rails, those long lines paralleled between the platforms where commuters stand in top coat, muffler, or in woolen hat. Numb fingers thumbing the loose ends of gloves, expectant of the call to draw them from their winter suburbs off to the ice towers of the working daylight. We have some hope, though all our hope still fails. Raised trees that have been felled. The blank cashier who answers our command for coffee and a scone. We feel the fat of idle hours, the long feline stretch of life sabbatical. Our eyes are set toward Center City. Aloft, the southerly birds head toward an age of daylight. But when the glorious letter in the mails, where words are sung and belled, when the revived heat in the cold land, our limbs are aching and our feet are flat, our thoughts encumbered by the gravitas of body's weight, our fall was hard and like no other. Will the soft wing of some other life lift us toward daylight? The second Sunday of Advent. We have a very strict ritual in our house about saying the Advent calendar, where the kids all hold a figure from a nativity set scene, and we say our prayer and read a story from a book, same book every year, that guides a little bear to Bethlehem, and then they have their candy. But when it was first starting as a tradition, I wrote this poem, the second Sunday of Advent. In the lamp circle of warm light, my daughter reaches up toward the pocket stitched with eight for silver-wrapped chocolate stowed there. As I've taught her, she may eat one each night and each night wait for my return from work with hungry eyes. Her joy is regulated thus, a prayer, a story, and a candy. Then she cries to get but one when there are others there. Wise St. Augustine knew that infants' greed for mother's breast was violent and abyssal, and thought their fragile innocence indeed more helpless limbs than grace, less rose than thistle. My daughter takes the unwrapped sweet and chews with a slow smackerel ritual I admire. The past had little purity to lose, and we have only discipline and desire. As far as I know, it's the only poem in English that, with the slow smackerel word, the only poem in English that makes references to St. Augustine and Winnie the Pooh within eight lines. The third Sunday of Advent. The twilight falls now earlier, and in with its swift dark comes the ring of the courier whose truck will pause, not park, with hazards burning, grill crusted in salt and slush, his load about to spill and face strained, slick and flush. The boys stand watching, stalled, feet halfway up the stairs, with reverent eyes called to the great box he bears. Little alcoves of light kindle our family's rooms, and smoke takes ribbon flight as the built fire consumes. I sign for what has come. The boys resume their noise. The groaning truck's deep hum joins in a carol's voice, the kitchen radio. The stars are singing too, as they did long ago when history went askew. Some hear them and cry, "Go, we do not want you here," while some presume to know the sense of what draws near. Some wait for packages, and some for the earth to crack. Some count the damages in a bare room at the back. In the stars' circulations, their measure, number, and weight, we find no affirmations of our unnatural state. For it is not their mission to soothe the stinging brain in its current position, its memories of pain. Dissolving them within that vast, indifferent map of what is, what has been, and the bone-fingered wrap of those things yet to come, but rather to light the hour as time hits a zero sum, when all we know of power and of the taste of meat of precious expectations, of trash cans lining the street, and 100 hesitations are overturned at once in an unheralded place where once and only once God cries to reveal his face. When I first met my wife, we had known each other for 2 days, and we were down at a lake house at the lake in Indiana, where my family spends its summers. And we had just been talking, you know, nonstop since we'd met. And I had no idea what she thought of me other than that she enjoyed my conversation. But I remember I was walking out the door of a house, and her fingers just grazed my back, and my whole self lit up like a fire. And I always wanted to remember that, but never found a way until this poem, the fourth Sunday of Advent. Snow that has fallen in the night blankets at last the sodden clay and offers such peace to our sight as if it were the eternal day. Yet shoppers now begin to fight among strip shelves, and husbands say some stinging thing to frazzled wives just before the first guest arrives. What blessing doesn't come ensnared with some hand-trembling nervousness? When the announcing angel stared on Mary, he had first to impress in soft words she must not be scared, for his refulgence came to bless. Yet even so, her lips gave out an innocent quavering of doubt. My wife, before she was my wife, let three pale fingers graze my back as I walked by her. A hot knife of thrill and fear made its swift track through me as if it cleaved my life. But here I zip her dresses back, and she turns, asks, does it look right, this bloom of violet and white? Unworthy men received in love. O fool who falls on some great gift. You know how grace waits just above when the dark hour seems adrift. When the earth groans for rest, crowds shove in greed, and rude words spark a rift to show, even now, our peace is drawn beyond this crisp but anxious dawn. And now, having made our way through Advent to the altar, we hear these words, the words of the church, the Christmas preface. There in the haze warmth and the steaming sty, the word born to the frailty of flesh cracks our mortality with a weak cry and seals our life within its endlessness. The word born to the frailty of flesh, he lies wrapped in the cloths of mystery and seals our life within his endlessness in infant finitude, eternity. He lies wrapped in the cloths of mystery, the straining of small limbs, unopened eyes, in infant finitude, eternity, and love invisible we recognize. The straining of small limbs, unopened eyes, draw us from torchlight to the light of glory. And love invisible we recognize, shaping the child's dream of the Christmas story. Draw us from torchlight to the light of glory. Crack our mortality with a weak cry, shaping the child's dream of the Christmas story, here in the haze warmth and the steaming sky. And the last poem is called The Feast of the Nativity. And I have to preface it, I'll mention this in the poem, but one of the great experiences of my life was sitting in a room, it was at Notre Dame, and the room was full of the Nashville Dominican nuns, if you know them. And my daughter came running in, and one, as I'll describe in the poem, just swept her up in her white habit and held her for an hour. And it was one of the most amazing scenes of just disinterested love that I had ever encountered. We should all be loved that way. The Feast of the Nativity. Struck by the stench of whiskey-soured vagrants, as I pass through the station vestibule and see their metal carts stuffed full of tattered and wind-whipped plastic bags, their potted bellies, it's hard to accept that we are called to praise. What shout of joy amid such poverty? The drained mouth of a flask gapes in its corner. Not far from here, the body of a girl leans over fresh, pricked flesh, slumps, and then contracts on the snow-dusted field outside the library. They'll find her later, limbs already cold, while others find starved children in a basement, their father's mugshot, blank-stared, hollow cheeks. after the bang, cries sift up over Mosul. Remembering some unstated ache, we grow indignant that we're not just called to praise, but ordered. Every knee must bend to stone at the sound of his name. Oh, how can we, seeing the withered husks that crowd the camps, the bulging eyes that peer from scoured sockets, because it seems there's nothing to be done? Because, amid the crash of bombs, a wedding has taken place inside a broken courtyard. Because a woman in a wheelchair, legs bird-like and folded underneath her lap robe, presses a string of beads in mumbled prayer. Because a square of butter gives itself away and runnels through the mashed potatoes. My daughter, not yet three, once chanced to run into a room where young Dominican nuns sat, upright and pale with faces laughing. As she rushed past, the sister swept her up in one great motion of her vast white habit, enfolding her an hour with placid love, wherein she rested, object of sweet praise. Amid impoverishment of plenitude, a verdant weight of odd abundance comes like heavy glass bulbs on a Christmas tree, their blue and red and gold hung at the limit of metal hooks, the fur's unruly needles bending with the encumbrance, and beneath, the well-wrapped boxes keep their generous counsel. Yes, all these things present themselves, will cleave us with their differences, as if one world rebuked the other by its gaudy show. But no, it is the bared branch that buds green, the soon-to-be-pierced hand that heals the ear. The night frost now receives the infant's cry, and a poor belly sits down to its feast.